Another hand. We're glad everybody's here today. What we're going to do for the Sunday message is to have a little bit of a roundtable discussion on a few issues with Jim Sledge and Scott Jameson and myself. But before we do that, I'm not, you know, necessarily real big on rituals, but just something that I've loved that I first saw with Claire was the idea of people standing and speaking the name of their father or their stepfather. And there's no pressure if you didn't have a good relationship with your father. By all means, don't stand or don't speak that name. Whatever you want. but I thought we would take a few minutes to do that. So I'll invite you to stand. And I'll start off. My father was Charles Raymond Ashley, but I also had a good relationship with my stepfather, Eugene M. Billings.
James Nathan Sledge III.
Freeland Thomas Jameson Jr.
Okay. And by the way, some of the people you'll notice were at the 9 o'clock service, so might not do it this time. Joyce, is it you? Yeah. Barb?
I kind of like it.
Thanks.
Ralph K. Hopkins.
And Francis Raymond Young. John F. Severson.
Warren Wheeland Falcon.
Okay.
Euclid William Grant.
Great, thank you. Okay, and Bert, let's start with you.
Louis J. Waldenberg.
Okay.
My father, Carol R. Bennett. Our daughter named Carol F.
Richard Bowden,
Raymond Henry Dahl. My father's not alive anymore, but his name was James Gilliard Towles.
Thanks, Jan.
Timothy Raymond Thomas Ryder.
Victor Solander.
William Ernest Borto.
This young man, Lloyd Jacobson.
My father, Emma Lynch.
Okay. And Lloyd, did you want to? And you guys go ahead. Sit this way. And is he close by? Thanks, Steve.
Joseph John Fisher.
Thomas Charles Stein.
Raymond Faraday Line Lovers.
Raymond Ida Long.
Thank you. And Doug, I skipped over you. Thanks, Doug. Well, just as Mary said, we're all here by divine appointment. We are all in relationships, and it's not by any accident. We are exactly with the people who we're supposed to have been with. So with that awareness, let's just give ourselves a big hand. I've known Jim Sledge and Scott Jamison both for, I think, about 13 years. I've known Jim mostly in the role of grandfather. I mean, I've known him somewhat in the role of a father, but his kids were already adults by the time I got them. But I've seen him as just as a marvelous grandfather. Scott, you know, I think Scott is so cool. Yes, I do. So I've seen you mostly in that capacity of as father. But I told him he may have some grandkids, but maybe he just doesn't know. But he assured me that was not the case.
Probably not.
So what I thought we'd do is just take a couple of minutes here. I wanted to ask these two some questions, and then I'm also going to respond to the questions. And just so you know, we were going to have a third person on this panel, John Cook. But John, as many of you know, works for FEMA. And so he was called away, and he's in Houston dealing with flood. What he does is he goes in and where houses have been damaged, and he appraises the damage and even writes them a check right there. So our blessings to John for that. So the first question I wanted to ask these two guys is, we all have expectations about certain kinds of roles that we play. And certainly within this culture, as I think within all cultures, two of the key roles that we play, first as man, and then secondly as father. So my first question to these two was, so what kind of expectations did you pick up from your family of origin, from society in general, about what's it take? How are you supposed to be a man in this society? So Jim, we'll pick on you first.
So I think I'm going to take my time to talk about how society views being a man in today's world. And I think it's really a challenging time for many people to know what being a man is in today's world, in our culture, in our society. And I think we get a lot of mixed messages regarding that. If one looks at where society or the values that society places on men by virtue of where they put their dollars, the most highly paid people are in the entertainment industry or in Wall Street. So what does one take from that? So from my point of view, the traits that perhaps are valued in those situations are strength, you know, toughness, violence, narcissism. You know, those aren't particularly traits that I find very appealing. So I feel maybe I'm at odds with a lot of what today's society is. On the other hand, if you look at surveys of women, when they're asked, well, what are they looking for in a man? Answers come back, gentleness, kindness, caring, sexual, being able to show emotions.
Leaves the toilet seat down.
Toilet seat down, too. But that's an emotional thing.
Yeah. They were looking at different surveys.
And that emotion thing kind of confuses me. Because I'm willing to emote. But every time I try to express my emotions to the officials on the Seahawks line, my wife says, no, you got to stop that. So you know, that's really a confusing thing to me. What's that emotion thing about?
I've heard that word.
Yeah. But, you know, those traits are the traits I think I find more appealing. In fact, if I look at the traits, the values of the men, that I've valued or admired the most, men like Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Jimmy Carter, those people. The traits that I'm looking for and admire in them and want to emulate in them are kindness, gentleness, the ability to be compassionate, the ability to be giving. Those sorts of things are the things that that resonate with me, and I'm hoping that some of those traits do come back through me. So as you look at me or talk to me or watch what I do, some of those things are fairly evident. Today's society, too, though, has some advantages, and I'm glad to be a man in this world at this particular point in time, because what I see with the decrease in traditional roles, it opens up a whole new world or several worlds for men to do things that perhaps they've never been able to do or certainly not encouraged to do. Things like cooking. I love to cook, mainly because I love to eat, but I mean, there is that correlation. But you know, in my dad's day, you know, barbecuing was okay, but anything beyond barbecuing just didn't happen. It wasn't a manly role to do at that point in time. And certainly in terms of raising kids, my dad was around, and I'm sure he probably changed a diaper or two, but you know, I was able to be fully present with my kids and certainly my grandkids, to do everything and to watch them grow, to participate in everything, including the discipline thing that Scott and I have talked about a couple times. You know, it's the wait till your dad gets home. You know, we don't do that much anymore, so that's good. So I think all in all, this is a really great time to be a man.
Thank you.
So it's complicated, isn't it? So in my family, my father was definitely the authority figure, and it's not something that he imposed on the family. It was part of his upbringing and part of an expectation of my mom, who also grew up with a very traditional, stoic male father in her family. So my father was part of the greatest generation. World War II veteran, earned a Purple Heart in World War II as a medic, and on returning from World War II, met my mom and joined the National Guard with the assumption that he would not be called up again. Well, the Korean conflict came up, and sure enough, he was called, and in Korea earned a second Purple Heart for a shrapnel injury to the chest, which bothered him all the rest of his life. And so returned home from Korea and enlisted in the reserve. Apparently he hadn't quite got that out of his system. But being in service to his country remained a major part of who he was all of his life. And that expectation, of course, was intended to be passed on to his three sons, who rebelled slightly. My oldest brother, Tom, attempted to gut it out in junior ROTC in 1974. Those of us who are old enough to remember would understand that would be a very difficult time to be in junior ROTC, a very unpopular thing with the rabid anti-war sentiment of that time. Then the middle brother, Chris, went through a year in ROTC. And I was somehow exempted. I was a band kid, played clarinet. And any of you who've had a budding clarinet player in your home, you have my sympathy. You're hereby nominated for the unity of equivalent of sainthood, whatever that is. My dad actually encouraged that. He also encouraged me to practice the piano. Our piano was in the same room as the TV set, which was down in the basement. And his form of encouragement consisted of watching TV while I practiced and said, don't, it doesn't bother me. Go ahead and practice. I'll just turn up the volume. So it was that type of kind of authoritarian figure, so part of being a man to him was being in service to country and community. And so it's those expectations, that some of which I embraced and some I rebelled against, that formed a part of my image of what it meant to be a man.
Thanks, Scott. And for me, I found that I was the youngest kid in my family, and my next closest sibling was about 10 years older. And my father wasn't around. He left when I was, I think, 3 or 4. What that means when you don't have a father there, and when your closest sibling is 10 years older than you, what that means is you pick up a lot of expectations about what it's like to be a man in this culture by plunking down in front of the TV. And so I got most of my cues from Father Knows Best and from the Donna Reed Show. And as I told the 9 o'clock service, I was in love with Donna Reed. and really, if you think back, those of you who are older, think back about that time of TV shows in the late 50s and early 60s, there was not a lot of violence on TV. I mean, that sort of came later. And so part of my cue about what it means to be a man of society was to kind of be a nice guy. But I have to admit that, as the 60s unfolded, boy, the action-oriented, the violence, certainly the athletics became a much bigger piece of it. And so there's certainly that segment of it, that piece of me that says, oh, to be a man of the society is also to be kind of macho and to take care of stuff and to be a good athlete. Somehow I work into every conversation. Well, I did start college on a wrestling scholarship. I'll try and work that in somehow, because I think, well, that's an important value too. My dad wasn't around very much, but my mom did remarry, and so my stepfather was a huge man, 6 foot, which is not necessarily real tall, but about 375 pounds. Yeah, and he was just a showman. I mean, he loved the limelight. One of my memories was working my way through college, tending bar, and up at the Eagles Lodge. And I still remember one night him coming in and saying, I would like a particular drink that is made with ice cream. And I said to him, well, Pop, you know we don't have any ice cream. But he goes, now you do. And he brings out like all these gallons of ice cream. And so part of what that meant to me was, that one of the cues you get to be a man of the society is to have a little bit of showmanship too, and to kind of surprise people. On occasion, I've been known to be up here on stage in front of So those are some of the characteristics I see, which is to somehow blend together trying to be nice and trying to be virile, and also to have a little element of showmanship in there, too. I think, so for me, that's what it meant to be a man in this society. What about that second question? I also asked these guys, and it's obviously going to overlap, but what's it mean to be a father in the society? What kind of cultural expectations did you pick up?
Well, when I was bringing home our firstborn, I remember looking over at this bundle and thinking, wait a minute, it's coming home? It was nice to visit in the hospital. Now what? Just a quick show of hands for the guys. How many people, how many guys here were prepared for fatherhood? One. George would be. The rest of us, yeah.
I thought I was prepared.
Oh, okay. There is a difference, yes, yeah. Yeah, when you think about it, you know, being a parent, being a dad, is probably the most important thing we'll ever do in our lives. And isn't it interesting that it's probably the thing we're most ill-prepared to do? I mean, girls in my age group, they had home ec. Guys, wood shop, metal shop, mechanics, yeah. Things that served us really well when that little one came home. So, what does it mean to be a father to me? Well, beyond the basics of, you know, the food, shelter, clothing, it means demonstrating or showing that the kids are loved, that that they're valued as individuals, and that they can have hopes and dreams. Because if you look at a lot of today's world, certainly in the U.S., there are places where kids don't have hopes and dreams. And how are they ever going to reach their potential if that isn't a possibility to them, if they haven't seen that as a possibility? And I think that's tragic. I think a lot of our society's ills stem from that sort of thing. So it's really incumbent on us to make sure that those things happen in the kids around us. It also means providing support and guidance when they take a wrong turn. And they take wrong turns, we all know that. We took wrong turns. But it's important not to rush out and fix it. And that's always been my thing. And I love the kids, so I'm going to go fix it. And I do that because, A, I'm a Virgo and I know what's supposed to be done. And because you don't want to see them make some of the mistakes that perhaps you did, and you were gonna make, you know, make that not happen. But it's really important to let them make some of those mistakes, but make sure they actually learn from those mistakes, as opposed to repeating the same thing again and again and quote, expecting a different outcome. It also means taking time to play with the kids. I think sometimes that gets lost in our hustle and bustle of doing things today, as we forget kids need to play. We need to play. And so it's always been important in our family to do some playing together, whether it's tossing the ball in the backyard, playing kickball. In our family, we do a lot of skiing and swimming. Badminton has always been a biggie. So those are the activities that really enable us to spend one-on-one time or one-on-two or three time with our kids and to show that play is fun, to be able to laugh when you fall down or laugh when somebody else has a faux pas. So learning to play and taking time to play is equally important. It also means encouraging them to be lifelong learners and to try to do different things, to explore new things. Probably doesn't come as a surprise to anybody in our family that music is something that's been encouraged in our family. Also literature. We are all avid readers. We pass books around like crazy and then we talk about them. And that's been just a real blessing for us to be able to share those things and communicate and talk about those things that they've picked up in their reading. And we see that now in our grandkids. You know, when we go out to the lake house, screen time just doesn't happen. We do a lot of fun things together. We read together. We play a lot of games together. Talk about you know, the ability to laugh when you lose at something or make a bad move. Those are fun things that we enjoy with our kids. It also means treating their mother, whether or not you're married to her currently, with respect and with kindness. Our kids learn what we model. So if they see abuse and unkindness at home, it probably should be no surprise that perhaps they're going to see that later on. I think a lot of bullying in schools today stems from that. If they see that at home, that becomes the norm, and perhaps then they carry that out later on. So in short, I think being a dad means providing a loving and safe environment for our kids to reach their full potential, and I love being a dad.
And Judy, just so you know, in the 9 o'clock service, when Jim mentioned treating the spouse with respect, Scott nearly dropped his pad up here. Scott,
don't read too much into that.
What are some of the expectations that you pick up about being a dad?
Well, you know, in my family, you know, the dad was the guy who fixed stuff, right? Took care of the car. You know, if it wasn't working right, he'd pop the hood and stare at it. And then start replacing parts until either it was fixed or he was realized that he was in over his head, and then he took it to another man to fix it. So, and it's kind of also up to the dad to model what it meant to be a man. Like, and one of the most effective lessons was fishing trips. Fishing trips were great because you learned the manly value of not talking too much. Because you might scare off the fish. And one of the assumptions about parenting that, frankly, I've rejected as a father was the notion that the dad shouldn't be too emotionally involved in the kids. If you had emotions, you certainly didn't express them. You know, anger was okay to express from time to time. And a style of discipline that I've realized my mom rejected. I wish she'd kind of passed that information on to my dad from a little sooner. My mom was dead set against spanking. My dad took a slightly more traditional approach. People in my age probably remember the belt, right? Snap, snap. And you'd better have your act together by the time he got it to the living room, or you might be on the receiving end of that thing. So that's a received idea about how to be a dad that I've definitely rejected. Train left the tracks. I think the biggest unintended consequence or unintended lesson of that you teach to your children is how fallible adults are. It's certainly not the lesson you intend to teach, but it's probably the one that comes through. But being humble enough to accept that fallibility and to use that as information to do a better job.
Well, Jim and I can both vouch for the fact that as you reach our age, the train's going to go off the track a lot more times.
We're not even sure why it came in.
Thanks, guys. Well, I think that one of the things that's interesting is just as we look at the way we relate as men in this society, but also as we relate as fathers in the society, is there's a lot of interacting, interlocking, intermeshing roles, aren't there? And it's kind of hard to pick them all apart nice and cleanly. One of the things that I think is true is as my kids have gotten older, is that I've learned that there's not really a role as father. I have two kids, and so one kid is 42 and one kid is 39. And there's not really a role as father. There's a role of father as I relate to my 42-year-old son. And that's really much different than the role of father as I relate to my 39-year-old daughter. And so I guess I've learned that, you know, when you have kids, when you do get cast in that role of a father, it never stops. I mean, it's forget it changes, but it never stops. It's forever. And so for any of you looking forward to the kids getting out of the house when they're 18, sorry. I can remember in college hearing, it was called The Looking Glass Self. And it was just this short little piece by Charles Horton Cooley, a sociologist at the turn of the last century. And what it said was, I'm not who I think I am, and I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am. You know, and, you know, what that said is, you know, I mean, we really engage in relationships, especially as a parent. There's a whole bunch of different levels going on, aren't there, about what we think we should do and what's the right way to enact this role, but also, you know, what are the expectations of other people, what do they think I'm supposed to do, and it all kind of gets mixed in there, doesn't it? I can still remember one time, this is maybe 20 years ago, leading a workshop down in Salem, Oregon. It was for men and women, and I asked the women at the workshop, what do you like the most about men and what do you like the least about men? Here's what was fascinating. The answer was the same thing. Yes. Yeah. And so it's just very intriguing, I think, that as we try and figure out how to play this role as man, as father, that we keep learning and we keep making mistakes, and hopefully we try and get better and better. And sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't. So anyway, let's give Jim and Scott another hand. I just think it's so powerful to get up here and just to kind of open up your heart and to say, here's what I think is going on. So thanks, guys.